Welcome to Spoiler Peace Theater, a podcast that doesn't give a shit about spoilers. We just want to talk about the movies. My name is Megan Kearns. My pronouns are she, her. I write film reviews for Edge Media Network. I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association. And I'm a member of Gallica, the Society of LGBTQ Entertainment Critics.
My name is Dave Riedel. I write about movies for the Chicago Reader, and I yap about movies too. My pronouns are he, him, and I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association, and yes, I'm still sick.
My name is Evan Crean. I'm co-chair of the Boston Online Film Critics Association and co-author of your 80s movie guide to better living. My pronouns are he, him, and I'm not sick, but I'm sorry you still are, Dave.
I know, me too.
Thank you. It means a lot to me that you both would commiserate with me in such a way.
We do. And I feel special that we get to share, not in the sickness. Yeah. Anyway, this is getting weird.
Not sure.
You want to share your germs.
Yeah. No, I don't want to share germs. But in addition to sharing, not germs, but camaraderie, we're also sharing our thoughts on movies, of course. And over on this week's Patreon, it's a patron request where we talk about the 1996 queer comedy, The Birdcage. And ooh, it is a lively conversation. We have divergent opinions. I love it. And we hope you do too. So if you're a patron, go check it out. And if you're not a patron, consider joining for $5 a month. Oh, and before we get into the show, I also want to let you know we have merch. You can go check it out on spoilerpiece.com. And I also, we want to give a huge thank you to Heather Sachs, our sponsor piece patron. So thank you, Heather.
Thank you.
So on this week's show, we're going to be talking about two films. We're talking about Return to Seoul, and we're talking about Somebody I Used to Know. And that's what we're going to kick the show off with. So Somebody I Used to Know is a comedy drama, and it is written by Alison Brie and Dave Franco, and it's directed by Dave Franco, and it stars Alison Brie. So let me get the synopsis.
It's not going to be IMDb, is it? I hope
not.
Oh,
God, no. No.
Okay, just checking.
No, this is the synopsis from the studio press kit. On a trip to her hometown, workaholic Allie reminisces with her first love, Sean, and starts to question everything about the person she's become. Things only get more confusing when she meets Sean's fiance, Cassidy, who reminds her of the person she used to be.
That is, in fact, the person she used to know.
That is correct.
Herself.
A former version of herself.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Jacques Hughes.
Yeah. The woman at the crossroads, except instead of a guitar, she had a camera and no clothes because she was a nudist.
Yes. So.
Yes. If there's anything I've learned about Alison Brie and her filmography is that she does not mind being nude in things.
Yeah, I never knew that about her until I saw Glow, and I was like, whoa, hey. And then now we've got a whole character who was a nudist. So.
That is true. That is true. So yeah, so when we meet Allie, she is basically giving herself a very vicious pep talk in the mirror, and she is the showrunner of a reality dessert competition show.
Dessert Island.
Yes. And it is absurd, just as it sounds. And yeah, and she's thinking everything's going great, and she basically gets fired because the show gets canceled. So she decides to kind of pick herself up emotionally and go back home, visit her mom. And while she's at the, and she walks in on her mom and her old principal having sex in her childhood house. And because she's weirded out by that, as one probably would be, she goes to the local bar and then she runs into Sean, her ex. And they haven't seen each other in about 10 years. And yeah, and they spend this day together and they watch the sun come up and it's really silly and fun and flirty. Mm-hmm. And so she goes in as he drops her off. She goes in for a kiss and he's like backing away. And she's like, oh, I clearly misread the situation, all of that. And then she shows up at his house the next day. And then his family is there and she meets. Eventually, she finds out he's getting married and she meets his fiance, and who's really cool and really awesome and is in a band. And she's a queer woman and she's, you know, free to be herself, and she is unapologetic about it. And that really reminds Allie of how she used to be a risk taker and used to be fearless. And yes, yeah, so that's basically the film. And what did you guys think?
Take it, Evan.
Well, I ended up liking it. Sorry for the dramatic pause.
That was a really dramatic pause.
I know. Honestly, at first I wasn't really digging it. I was like, for a comedy, I'm not really laughing very much. I feel like the first time I actually really laughed was when she was ducking in the booth at the bar, and then Jay Ellis comes up to her and she's like, I was just down here looking for this peanut. And they're, you know, cracking jokes about like whether they're going to split the peanut or not. And I thought that was actually pretty funny. And I started to dig the movie. I mean, it's very uncomfortable, the kind of situation where it's like she's crashing his engagement and wedding festivities with the plan to like win him back. But I like that she ends up becoming friends with his fiance and ultimately at the end ends up getting them to talk through their issues and they end up together, which I think is nice. Although the film really faked me out at first because I thought she was going to end up with the fiance. I thought her and Kirstie Clemons were going to get together when they shared that kiss and then spent the night together in the bed. I was like, whoa, interesting twist movie.
This was, I would have liked that.
I would have been an interesting way to go with it. But, you know, I like that after, you know, what happens is she is talking with her friend who's like the co-producer on her show. And she initially is like, oh, you should invite, you know, Cassie's parents. That'll like really torpedo things. So she's estranged from her family. And then she's like, but wait, don't do it. And then the friend doesn't listen and invites them anyway. And so they show up and that really blows things up because Cassie thinks that Sean, J. Ellis' character, did it. That's a whole fight. But I like that once the air is cleared about that, you know, Alison Brie is like, okay, sorry. And I will leave now and let the wedding proceed as it was, you know, supposed to. I think that was the nice thing, the smart thing to do at that point was to walk away and let them be the couple that they're supposed to be, as you find out late. After that, they, you know, they get married and they're having a kid and all is great for them. And Alison Brie finds fulfillment in her career by interviewing, by making the nudist documentary she so wanted to make before.
That's right.
In the nude.
Right. Asking all of the tech people to be in the nude while she's nude conducting the interview with the nudist.
Mm-hmm.
Right. No, I can't remember if we talked about this on the Patreon or the main episode last week, but it's, you know, it's like the idea, like, I'm not going to ask my people to do anything I wouldn't do as a filmmaker.
Yeah,
exactly.
I respected that.
And it was all to make the interviewee comfortable too.
Right. Yeah. So I ended up liking this. I found it. I did find it charming, and it did go in a direction that I liked. After feeling some, you know, intense discomfort at the initial plot line of her going there and like wrecking this wedding and torpedoing this couple.
Dave, what did you think?
Oh, I love this. I mean, who are you kidding? I mean, I think Alison Brie is just the best. So there's that. Even though she was in that fucking horrible Jeff Baena movie we saw a few months ago.
Which one?
Oh yeah, the
one where she's the chef.
Olive Garden restaurant.
That was awful. Yeah. Although I don't like the other Jeff Baena movie she's in either, but that's all other thing.
Is that the one about the nuns, but who are in the 13th
century? There's that. There's Horse Girl.
Oh, see, I don't think I ever saw Horse Girl. Yeah. But what I really found, I found lots of things compelling about this, but what I really found compelling was, I don't know how many romantic comedies I've seen where, if we're calling this a rom-com, where you have two characters who split up not because of some, they split up because of like basically practical reasons. You know, she was going to move to Los Angeles and pursue her career, and he was going to stay in their hometown and end up, as it turns out, you know, taking over his father's construction business. And what happens when those people like see each other after such a long time and there's so much that, you know, hasn't been said.
Mm-hmm.
So, I just thought that that was a really, interesting take.
Mm-hmm. But the scene where they are sitting, you know, watching the sunrise together, I thought was very compelling, to your point. Yeah. When they have that moment to kind of both admit to each other, you know, I've always wondered what would happen if we had, you know, stayed together, and I've thought about you over this time. It felt mm-hmm. very real.
Oh yeah.
To me, watching the characters within the scene, this is good acting, and this mm-hmm. no.
Agreed.
Feels very real.
Yeah, I've gotten to that age now. Listeners, do you hear it? Talking about how old I am. I've gotten to that age now where I know people who have like split up with their spouses and then like bumped into or accidentally on purpose bumped into like their college boyfriend or their high school girlfriend or whatever. And now they're back together, you know, because like this shit happens, you know.
Hey, J-Lo and Ben Affleck.
Yeah. I mean,
true.
Is that one going to last? Who can say?
God, but, I hope so.
I know.
I'm rooting for those two.
I'm rooting for Ben Affleck to just smile in public once. That's all. preferably with J-Lo at his side. But anyway, I also liked that, you know, it's just smartly written. You know, Allie's not a dum-dum, and she realizes very early on what she's doing. She knows from the moment she begins, like, trying to sabotage this wedding that it's wrong, and she keeps doing it anyway. And then as she gets to know Cassidy better, and I just like the way it all kind of comes with her just realizing, what have I done, you know? And I did not interpret the Cassidy-Allie kiss as a romantic kiss, but, you know, I did think it was funny that, that, you know, she just had that sort of, are we going to get back together conversation with Sean, and then 8 hours later she's asleep with the fiance and Sean's knocking on the door. He's like, Cassidy, I've decided you're right and I'm gonna do whatever you wanted. And she's just like hiding behind the door. I don't know. It's nice to see Julie Haggerty too.
Oh yeah. she's so funny.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen her like this, but you know, in two of the four scenes she's in are sex scenes, just in case anybody's wondering, listeners. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I just dug this a lot. It took several unusual for rom-coms turns. It's more thoughtful than your average rom-com movie. And it's more dramatic too, which I think is all on purpose. So I really dug it.
I love that.
What about you, Megan? What'd you think?
Yeah, so I liked it. Much like you, Evan, the beginning, I was like, what the fuck is this movie? I was ready mm-hmm. to riot. I was like, I don't want to watch this. What is happening?
Yeah.
And but I was like, I love Alison Brie. And, you know, anytime she's on screen, and I really liked The Rental that Dave Franco did. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna hang tight, see where this goes. And yeah, mm-hmm. I was very pleasantly surprised. I like Jay Ellis. He's really good in Insecure.
Yes.
And so it was nice to see him here in a kind of co-lead role or lead supporting role, if you were. And I love Kiersey Clemons, and I'm always delighted when she shows up. I think she's great. And I don't know if this film would work quite as well if you had actors who were not at the level of either of them in the supporting roles. And yeah, I really liked this a lot more as it goes on. It made me like, the film makes me like the film more as it proceeds. And I think for the reasons both of you are saying, it is really thoughtful. It is really interesting. And, you know, Cassidy makes a reference to My Best Friend's Wedding, which of course you can't not draw that comparison. And she's like, you're not going to Julie Roberts, you know, My Best Friend's Wedding, my wedding, are you? And, you know, at first it kind of makes sense as to why Allie is there, because Allie knows Sean's family. Like, she's been kind of a part of the family for so long, and his mom invites her to everything. She's so close to his parents. She's close to, you know, his brothers. So it makes sense in a way. But then of course she's like becoming, you know, insidiously devious as things go along. But I really like that. It would have been so easy to pit the two women together, against each other. And yeah. I love that instead they come together and they really come to understand each other and to kind of inspire each other. Whereas Allie is telling, you know, Cassie, like, don't give up your dreams of the band, you know, don't conform so much to Sean, you know, he needs to mm-hmm. listen to you too. And I love that Cassidy's, you know, free spirited nature reflexively inspires Allie to go after what she wants. Like, so much she's been so driven to make it in LA, and she's not even doing really what she wants. Like, yes, she's doing documentary series, like she's in reality TV, but that's not really what she wants. She wants to do documentary filmmaking, which is, so it's so great to see her do that at the end. And I think what's really interesting about this film too, is it really raises the question of, and it's kind of funny, it reminds me weirdly of Magic Mike's Last Dance that we discussed last week, because even though that film has lots of problems, one of the things that is a theme that carries over into this film is, when you get your dream or when you achieve your dream, does it really make you happy? And so I think that that's a really resonant theme. And I think it's really fascinating to kind of look at going after your dreams and what do you do when you sacrifice those, and how do you balance going after your aspirations, but also making room in your life for loved ones. So I really love that this film is doing that with nuance and complexity. So this movie really won me over by the end. I love the ending. I really like these characters. And yeah, I really liked it.
Awesome. Glad we're pretty much on the same page about this movie.
Me too. I'm kind of surprised, honestly. So that's a nice surprise.
I'm not surprised, you big softies.
Yeah.
We are.
I mean, I can tell you what wasn't a nice surprise was finding out that one of the reasons that Cassidy is estranged from her parents is that they're huge homophobes.
Oh, yeah, they're so gross.
Yeah.
That was super painful. I'm glad that she didn't like wander into that scene. I think that would have been a horrific choice. I'm glad Allison Brie and Dave Franco didn't do that.
Yeah, that scene was just brutal. And yeah, as someone who has cut out family members for their horrific attitudes and opinions and behavior, I'm kind of glad, not even kind of, I'm glad that we see a character do that, who's like, nope, mm-hmm. I've cut off communication. I'm doing this. This is self-care for me. So I agree with you, Dave. I think it's a smart choice that they didn't have her there, but that it's still addressed there. Like, yeah, yeah. I think it's really well done. And I also love, because Kiersey Clemons is a queer person in real life, so I love that she's queer. Her character is queer in the film. And I love that she's still very vocal about her queerness. And because the film is clearly acknowledging that just because somebody appears to be in a hetero relationship doesn't mean mm-hmm. they are straight. And I love that. And we don't have enough queer characters, and we don't have enough of those kinds of conversations on screen. So I love that. Really smart choice.
Yeah, that was a great element to the film. And something that Shauna had actually pointed out to me that I thought was great about Cassidy as a character too, is there's that part in the film where Allison Brie's character talks about how she interviews people and how she leaves silences to make people uncomfortable and to like confess things. And she pointed out to me, and I'd forgotten about this during the movie, that she, you know, Allie tries to do that to Cassidy.
Yep, it doesn't work on Cassidy. Yeah.
And that's such a great, you know, illustration of her character, both the strength of her character and also, you know, the reasons that you were describing earlier, Megan, about why they end up getting along so well and why they find such kinship with each other, and that shortly before they're very stoned and decide to streak across the golf course together.
I also think it's really funny that little kid is there and they're like, no. And like Haley Joel Osment is like, no, no, don't go. Don't chase after them. And the kid's like drops his golf clubs and tries to chase after the naked women anyway. There's something absurd about that I thought was funny.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought I'd see the kid from The Sixth Sense doing the worm.
Well, you did, sir.
Sure did. I mean, it never occurred to me that that might be a possibility. So, you know.
That's true.
Right.
What I thought real quick was interesting about the homophobic parents was, one, dad's vitriol not even contained.
Ugh.
But I got the feeling that, and I don't know why, just watching the two of them, that mom was actually more interested in placating her father than, you know, hating her queer daughter. You know what I mean? Placating her husband, pardon me, than hating her daughter, which I just thought was, that's what it felt like. And I was like, huh, if that's what it was, if I didn't misinterpret that, that's an interesting take. So interesting is kind of a, you know, nebulous word, but whatever. It was interesting.
No, I think you're right. And I think it shows the range of gross responses that she still, even if that is her prerogative, that she wants to appease the horrible father, she's gross too, because she's in on it too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's showcasing how there's different responses, but they're still all terrible, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. I just want to make clear that wasn't a, like, give mom a pass.
No.
That wasn't it. I definitely picked up on that vibe too, that some of what she was doing was simply to kind of keep the peace with her husband.
Yeah.
Like, she seemed like she also had terrible opinions, but some of what she was doing was really rooted in, like, I got to be married to this guy. I don't want to make too much commotion.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's just another example of how this movie went to places that I didn't expect it to go, that you don't expect movies rooted in, you know, like, well, they won't they, you know, kind of stuff to do.
Right.
There's nudity.
Yeah.
There's a whole lot of nudity in this movie.
There's a little bit of that, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are at least two lines where Alison Brie is like, what, you just saw my boobs in my bush.
That's right. That's kind of how it ends, right? The camera operator asks her out, and she's like, you're not asking me out just because you saw my boobs in bush, are you? And he's like, because she asked him out. That's the guy she asked out at the beginning of the movie, right?
Right.
Yes. Yeah. And I kind of love that ending for her too, that it's bookended and comes full circle, because it so often in rom-coms, and I know this is not a traditional rom-com, but still, so often in rom-coms, there's the choice, like, you know, between career or, mm-hmm. and not even just rom-coms, in movies in general, there's a choice between career and your love life. And that's obviously what broke up Allie and Sean. And I kind of love that by the end, because she's more comfortable in her skin, because she's embracing who she is, which is very different than the beginning of the film, where she's this hard ass who is not really herself, but she's kind of embraced that persona in order to pursue her career. I love that she gets her career. She's clearly comfortable with who she is. You know, like, even when she's got her regular clothes on, she's not wearing a bra. And, like, mm-hmm. this is me. It kind of reminds me, this is a weird comparison, but it reminds me of the end of Devil Wears Prada, when Anne Hathaway is not the terrible fashion from the beginning, but she's also not the high fashionista when she's working with Meryl Streep, Miranda Priestly. She's, you know, kind of like low-key chic. And so she's kind of fused her personality. And I feel like that's what Alison Brie is doing here through her wardrobe. It's like, I'm comfortable in my skin. This is who I am. And the guy responds. And so it's kind of cool that it's like gravy that she gets, you know, a potential relationship after she's so comfortable with herself and her career.
And also, don't forget, everybody, date your coworkers.
Yeah, always a great idea to date coworkers.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, when I worked for a large news organization that shall remain nameless, so many people marry other people who work there because that's the only place you ever are.
Yeah.
Because you work so many hours. So why not marry, you know, the booker from Good Morning America if you're doing Nightline, because you're both in the building at the same time all the time. So
doesn't sound like a recipe for disaster at all.
Not at all. There's also a lot of divorces that go on at that place. So, you know.
Yeah. Shocker. But yeah. Yeah. All right. Do we have any final thoughts?
You caught me in a mute mic moment. No.
I have impeccable timing that way. Evan, do you have any final thoughts?
I liked the mini community reunion with
Danny Pudi.
Playing the friend. And I like that he keeps telling her the entire time, this is wrong. You should not be doing this. You should right. not be trying to fuck up this relationship and ruin things for Sean. Like, stop doing that. And then they all hit him in the nuts.
Yeah. But I like also that he's kind of not in a way, like he says, like, I'm not taking sides. No, he clearly is, because he's like, no, don't fuck up the wedding. But I like that he's still very supportive of her. Like, he's still trying to be there for her too. So I like that.
Yeah. It's nuance that you don't expect in movies like
this. Yeah. Agreed. This is a good one. Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about our next film, which is Return to Seoul, which is a German, Belgian, French co-production. It is written and directed by Davi Shu and stars Park Ji-min. And let me give you the synopsis from the studio. After an impulsive travel decision to visit friends, Freddie, 25 years old, returns to South Korea for the first time, where she was born before being adopted and raised in France. Freddie suddenly finds herself embarking on an unexpected journey in a country she knows so little about, taking her life in new and unexpected directions. Yeah, so this film takes place over the course of about 8 years, and we check in with Freddie at various points as she returns to Seoul, as the title of the film states. And yeah, when she's first there, she's staying at this, what they call a guest house, kind of like a hostel. Sort of like a motel and kind of combo. And a friend of hers is Korean and also French, and is kind of her translator. And they go around Seoul, and she's trying to contact her birth parents through the adoption agency. And she gets in touch with her father, and she travels to meet him and her aunt and grandmother. And they're all kind of translated through her friend. And it's very awkward because, one, they're having trouble communicating, and also because Freddie is very upset and very angry and has a lot of conflicted feelings. And then we check in again as she has been living in Seoul, and she has a very different appearance, and she's trying to go on a dating site to meet older men. And then she gets a job and selling missiles, which sounds kind of wild, but makes sense in the context of the film. And yeah, then she comes back again to Seoul with her, her boyfriend, and then she connects with her birth mother. And so those are the very, very broad strokes. But basically it's following Freddie as she is navigating her identity and her connections to her adopted parents, who seem very lovely, and to her birth parents. So what did you guys think?
I loved it.
Oh, yay!
Yeah, I thought this was an incredible movie. I was really sucked in by the just absolutely stunning cinematography and the absorbing score. I thought the lead performance was just fantastic. And I really thought this movie did a stellar job of exploring the complexities of Freddie's life and her identity, and trying to grapple with the fact that, you know, she's Korean, but she's raised in France, and, you know, her whole life had been there, and wanting to get to know her biological parents, but feeling deeply uncomfortable, especially her father, the way he's he drinks and he's very overbearing, and he wants her to move there, and everyone's so focused on her being a nice, you know, Korean girl and meeting and marrying a Korean man. And just, she does a lot of really great acting with her face in this film, and she makes a lot of very uncomfortable facial expressions that, you know, it makes it very obvious how she's feeling, even if she can't communicate with the people in their language. And there are just so many moments throughout the film where you kind of see her drift off into some type of place that is, it makes you really feel for her. It makes you just feel absolutely horrible for her, what she's going through, the emotional struggle and the wrestling that's going on internally. So I thought this was great. I loved this.
Dave, what did you think?
I more or less feel exactly the same way.
Oh, yay!
I was watching this today, and I don't remember why I decided to look at how long the movie had been on, you know, and I was like, you know, it's 45 minutes in, and I was like, 45 minutes? I feel like I've like just sat down to watch this thing. And then I thought to myself, why can't every movie be this good? I don't care what your subject matter is, just why can't they be this good? Mm-hmm. You know? And if you you talk about, one, difficult subject matter. Two, the lead has never acted before.
That's correct.
The director didn't know anything about Korea and had to spend years researching Korean tradition and how the adopting things worked and talk to people, you know, who, adoptees and how uncomfortable that must be. And all this other stuff. And you get this movie that is superbly acted, superbly written, superbly directed. And it looks beautiful, just like Evan said. In this really sort of garish kind of way, I might add, but it's still like, well, because the contrasts are so contrasty, you know, colors are when they're in the, whenever somebody's walking through town at night, you know, you've got the deep red or the deep green of the neon. And then, you know, you've got this blackness in the corner, but it's almost like a Gordon Willis thing where you can kind of see the outline of a door or whatever. I'm getting a little too specific.
No, great observation.
But yeah. And just to see Freddie, I didn't really know where the movie was going to go. And then when she returns to Seoul, when she's got the missile selling job, and she's got her boyfriend with her, and her father is so strange at the end of that meeting and just like throws them to a cab and herds them away. And the kind of wave he's giving to them seems like a goodbye forever wave. I don't know how you...
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Very much so.
And she says to the boyfriend, I can't remember exactly how she put it, but I could get rid of you with the snap of my fingers or something like that.
Yep.
And she's been sober for however long she's been sober, and she's been vegan forever, how long she's been vegan. And then the next day she wakes up in an alley. And so she's fucking snapped her fingers, and the boyfriend presumably is no more. Mm-hmm. And she spent all night drinking and doing drugs and just, you know, getting out of herself. And it's just like a not so subtle but still very poignant metaphor for the torture that she feels not really being from, as I think her character sees it, being from anywhere. She's not Korean because she wasn't raised in Korea, but she's not, and I know we don't like to pin things on certain countries and how they act as a people, but French people can be really fucking racist, like to your face. I can only imagine what it was like to be somebody who, you know, is Korean ethnically, but is French, you know, has no idea what life in Korea is like. And to just like live that way your whole life and, you know, always being asked, where are you from? It's like, well, I'm from the fucking 17th arrondissement. What do you, you know, the fuck?
What do you mean, where am I from? I'm here.
Yeah. Although I think she's actually from the country and she lives in Paris now.
Yes.
But yeah, she did say that.
So I just think that there's just so much, it's just such a rich story. And the ambiguity of the ending, how she emails her mother and the email, her birth mother and the email address, she gets back one of those things you get on Google. It's like, oh, we couldn't reach that address.
Bounce back. Yeah.
Yeah. Bounce back. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh man, what a bummer. But at the same time, if you look at her face, she doesn't seem surprised at all.
No.
You know?
No.
And it seems like she's gotten acceptance about it, finally. Mm-hmm. Maybe she's not comfortable with it, but she's accepted it. And I think that, I don't know, and then bringing it all back around to sight reading when she sits down at the piano and she's sight reading this thing. Doesn't seem to be a particularly difficult piece for her, but just watching her kind of stumble through it. And I mean, oh God, what an ending. So there you go. This is just, I wish I had seen this in 2022 because I think it was submitted to the Academy Awards from Cambodia, ultimately, right?
That's correct.
I absolutely would have voted for this for best, like, whatever, I don't know how the category is even labeled now, international feature.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, this is what a stunning piece of work from start to finish.
I could not agree more. I also wish I had seen this last year too. And I'm really sad that we didn't get screeners for it and that it didn't come anywhere near us. You know, it just played for qualifying for the Oscars. Everything you guys are saying, completely agree with this. Yeah. The look of this is beautiful. The acting. Oh my God. Park Ji-min is so incredible. I was stunned and shocked when I read that this was her first film, that she'd never acted before. She's a plastics artist. Like, that's just incredible. And apparently this is they worked very collaboratively together, the director and she both worked collaboratively on the character of Freddie, because apparently she came to him and said, like, this is sexist, or, you know, this doesn't quite work, or this doesn't ring true as a woman. And so they really kind of crafted that character together. And I love that. And that the filmmaker was so receptive to that. And Devishu speaks very openly about that. I love that. And what's also great is I love her expressions of rage. I read something not that long ago that, or maybe it was even in a TikTok video. Who knows? TikTok has permeated my life and everyone's life. But I either read or saw something somewhere talking about women's rage and how it's depicted on screen, and how so often when male filmmakers depict women's rage, it's in a very particular kind of way. Like it's not one that necessarily rings true to how people, especially women, may actually react. And when you have women's rage, like, to see the range of it, that sometimes she snaps at her father because she's pissed off because he's dumping all of his grief and all of his sadness and tragedy onto her. And it's like, she doesn't deserve that. And she barely knows this guy and she doesn't want that, you know, and the grandmother is like fawning over her and like stroking her hair in this kind of claustrophobic way. And she's like, you know, kind of like, she doesn't say this, but her body language is like, get away from me. And she's also very, like, so she has all this anger and resentment about that. And she also is clearly very pissed off when, like, the guy that she has sex with wants to, like, date her and wants, and he's like, you should live in Korea. You should stay for me and we should have a relationship. And she's like, no, you're ridiculous. That's not happening. And it's very clear that she's so frustrated with people telling her what to do and what she should do and what she should feel. And she's like, no, I'm not doing that. And so I love that we see her rejections of that through her face, through her really fantastic facial expressions, as you were saying, Evan. But we also get this physicality from her, like when she's dancing, when she's like pissed off and she's like dancing it out, which
rage dancing,
yes, which sounds absurd, but is done so beautifully and brilliantly. And you feel what she feels. And it's so good. And she feels like a real character. I mean, like a real person, not just a character. And I feel like even though she's kind of got this unpredictability to her, I feel like I could predict what she's going to do, even though she's unpredictable, just because she feels like such a real person. And I love that. And so this acting is impeccable. The direction is impeccable. It's very clear, like you were saying, Dave, that the filmmaker did so much research and took so many years writing this. And this is based on a real experience of a friend of his. And it's very clear that there's an authenticity here that resonates throughout the film. And I adore this. I think from start to finish, this captivated me and just was riveting and emotional and searing and gutting and all of the good adjectives.
I'm going to put gutting into my column of good adjectives.
For me, gutting is often a mark of a good film.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, again, there's just, oh, I'm sorry. I got excited.
No, you can go.
I just was saying, much like the last film we were talking about, there's so many layers and so much complexity to this within Freddy as a character, but also amongst her family, her biological family, and all of the pain that they feel and the shame and the regret. And then even her friend, who's the translator, who's like, you're being mean to people. And like, there's nuance there. And it's very clear, like, Freddie is just, she's not afraid to piss people off. And she's not afraid to torpedo her relationships, you know, because I think there's, the director talks about this in an interview, that there's this notion of kind of impermanence and like how, you know, nothing is constant and anything can change at a moment, like what she says to her boyfriend. And I think that theme really threads throughout, and this is just so good.
Yeah, it is. You want to talk about gutting, though? There's the scene where she does finally meet her mom after all those years, and we just see her face from the opposite side as her mom is walking into the room and she's sobbing and her mom is holding her while she's sobbing. That scene was very gutting and very well done, and I just thought shot in such a compelling way that, like, we almost can't even see the mom at all. We don't even really see her face. And the way that she just comes in and Freddy is already just broken down, sobbing, and they have to, you know, her mom has to basically be like, okay, I'm going to come over here and try to comfort you as best I can. Person who I've never met, who has been wanting to meet me, and I finally kind of acquiesced to this request.
Yeah. Almost shamed into it, it seems. But
yeah, possibly. Yeah. I think a lesser film would not have lingered as long as it did on Freddie crying and her biological mother's hand, like, you know, patting her. And so I think this really shows a confident filmmaker, and that allowing that moment to take its time. But yeah, it is really interesting thinking about that, like how she has her father's attention. Like, her father is like always messaging her these emails and texts, and they're inappropriate and they're awkward and they're too intrusive. And he's drunk a lot of the times, which, you know, it makes her, of course, uncomfortable. But it's clear that that's not, like, she's still craving the parent that she hasn't had contact with. And it's just, I just find it really fascinating, a fascinating dynamic. And something else the filmmaker said in an interview was that so often films, when they portray adoptees, it's like, oh, everything is fine once the adoptee is reunited with their biological parents. And it's like, no, actually, that's often when the problems start and when, you know, issues kind of come to light. And I also love that we get it from her perspective, because so often we see it from a parent's perspective. And I love that we get it from the child's perspective. I think that's invaluable.
Mm-hmm. It is a really interesting dynamic with her dad, because, like you said, he's it's very awkward and uncomfortable and inappropriate. And you can tell how uncomfortable she feels and how awkward and how much she really dislikes the dynamic. But there's something that keeps kind of pulling her back to him. And I was just thinking about, after he meets her for the first time and spends like a day with her, and he's like, you should come back and see the family. And she's like, no, I'm not going to do that. And then she ends up going there. And then, like, the first shot you see in the house is like the portrait of the family. And he took a photo with her and like slid that in, like, literally the next day, a photo of her and him next to his family. And so I think she keeps kind of coming back to him, because as uncomfortable as he makes her, he does have a genuine affection and is really trying hard to make up for lost time. And, like, you know, even when he sends her that really goofy happy birthday message of him and his daughters with the fish, and she can't help laughing after she just deleted two of his other emails that were in, like, the spam folder. So I don't know. I think there's something for her that keeps pulling her back, because he won't let go. You know, it's like, no matter what she says or does to try and shake him off, he still wants to be there for her, even if he's doing a bad job of it, even if he's making her uncomfortable, even if it's inappropriate. it's almost like she respects that he's trying so hard that she can't like fully push him aside.
Yeah, either that or she feels pity, or both.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah, yeah. I know the actor who plays her father, Oh Kwang Rock, he's fantastic. He's so good.
Yeah, he really is.
He is.
But yeah, but I'm really glad. As again, I mentioned this earlier, someone who has very, very complicated relationships with family, I really appreciate that we see and feel the spectrum of Freddie's discomfort, but also her pull to her father, like you said, Evan. And I like mm-hmm. that we get those conflicting emotions and perspectives because, yeah, nobody's really wrong here. Like, I mean, I guess you could argue that the father is wrong for being like inappropriate in like some of his, you know, desires, like that he wants to marry her off to a good Korean man. And
right.
You know, when he doesn't even know her and things like that. And it's very clear he doesn't know her, like with the shoes. And I love that something so simple as like the ballet shoes. And she's like, I hate these. And like, but she just has him buy them for her. Because he's so desperate to buy something for her to make up for lost time. And
mm-hmm.
yeah, but I love that we get this complex lay of the land. And this is just so good. This movie's so good.
It is, yeah.
It changed my mind. I don't like it anymore.
You just want to be a contrarian.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I think I have to watch it again, actually. I don't know. This is totally bizarre, but it's like when I was sitting down to watch this, I was like, this is, I just know that this is going to be my kind of movie. So unless it's like done really badly, there's no way I'm not going to like this. And I was correct. I know myself, I guess is what I'm saying.
Well, that's important, you know?
Yeah.
Actually, that ties into the movie too, because it's very clear that Freddie knows who she is too, but yet this is still a film about self-discovery and kind of an emotional journey. And I like that. I like that she knows who she is, but she still needs to learn more about herself and find out mm-hmm. more about herself. Because so often when you follow a character who's going on a journey, it's like they're clueless about themselves. And we're not starting from that place. We're starting from someone who is very comfortable with themselves and very comfortable in being disruptive. And yeah, but they still need to figure things out. And I really like that. I think that feels more realistic to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, her figuring herself out is, I think that for me, the most compelling part was when it jumped from the initial period of her visiting Korea to it's, you know, 2 years later, she's living in Korea and she's like, you know, hanging out in this like tattoo club and dating this tattoo artist. And she's rocking this leather jacket and like hanging out in like the Korean underground. And it was just, it's such a startling transformation. And you see it in her hairstyles, the way her hair evolves over the movie, the way that she dresses evolves over the course of the movie. And it's just a really cool transformation to see between the different eras of Freddie that we get to sit along with.
Yeah, there's a lot of attention to detail in everything from her hairstyles and makeup and wardrobe to the locations. Yeah, it's all mm-hmm. meticulously done.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that last hairstyle, but okay. Different time in your life.
You don't like that last hairstyle, Dave, the short one?
No. I don't know if you've noticed, I'm growing out my hair long too. So.
It is kind of interesting though to see her with that hairstyle, and she's also dressed completely differently than we've ever seen her.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, backpacking, and it's just it's interesting in that last part, because the woman who's behind the counter at the hotel, you know, takes her passport and she's like, oh, happy birthday. And we know that Freddie hates her birthday. And so, and she resists it. And then like, I was thinking that I'm like, did she not know it was her birthday? But anyway, I think it is interesting her look and how it, like you said, how it evolves. And I'm wondering what that says about her at that point in her life.
Says she wanted shorter hair.
It could be that simple, or it could be more.
Yeah.
Could be more to it.
Right,
than
yeah.
That.
It could be more exploration of her her gender identity.
Yes.
I mean,
rejection of stereotypical femininity.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we know that she's queer. It's not explicitly stated like, oh, I'm bi or I'm pan, but she clearly has interest in men and women.
Yeah,
makes passes at both.
Yes, she does. I love that you brought that up, Evan.
There are many reasons people change their hairstyles.
Mm-hmm.
I grew a beard for one reason. I hate shaving. So that is why I have a beard. Just in case anybody's wondering what I look like, which you're not. So,
you know. Well, they can look you up on social media too.
That's true. They could.
Yeah, I was going to say, you definitely have some pictures of you with your beard on Instagram and stuff.
That
and
is Sans true.
Beard too. You can get the whole picture.
Ooh,
you
know,
the
progression.
See the full day progression. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. I would say though, and you're right, Dave, people do change their appearance and their hair for various reasons. But I would imagine just because every single thing is so intentional in this film, I would not be surprised that there was a very specific reason.
Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm just kind of being flip, you know, for the sake of it. But
because you're silly.
Yeah. But yeah, there's intentionality behind everything in this movie and intentionality behind everything she does.
Yes. Yes. So. Very true. Very true. All right. Do we have any final thoughts?
Mostly just that I'm haunted by her eventually, like a year later, trying to email her mom and getting that bounce back. Because like, I'm not sure which scenario is worse. The idea that she just gave her a false email address and that email address never existed. Or she waited a year to email her mom, but her mom died in the interim, and then her email address is not active. And so either way, like, I just found myself haunted by both of those scenarios.
Interesting. See, now I went with fake email address. So, but yeah, the other is a real possibility.
Yeah, I also thought it was a fake email address too, just because she was so hard to get a hold of initially.
Yes.
I did obviously think that there was another possibility, but I didn't think that she died. What I thought was that she might have waited for a while to hear a response, and then she's like, well, didn't fucking hear from her. I'm deleting that email, you know? So I thought that that could be it too. But she could have, of course, died. But I was gravitating more towards fake email.
Mm-hmm. Did we think that there was also any possibility that that actually wasn't her mom and someone who someone who worked at the agency was like, we just need to give this girl some closure. So like, let's just have someone pretend to be her mom and then like give her like a fake email address.
Oh my God. I didn't think that, but that's awful. That's
horrifying. That's nuts, right?
That actually did cross my mind because of the weird exchange that Freddie has with the woman who works at him, and right before her mom comes in the door. It's like, I thought you weren't allowed to send more than three telegrams. I thought it was illegal. And this is like the sixth. And she's like, well, somebody here, you know, is sympathetic to your situation or something. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, it was weird. What I had originally thought before she, because I thought that too, and before the woman said that kind of weird thing, I thought it was going to be the dad. Like the dad had gotten in touch with the mom and like, that's why he was so weird at the end. Like when he shoved her in the cab, and that's what I was thinking, but clearly that's not what happened. Yeah. But maybe it was a fake person. Oh, that's awful. That's awful in a whole other way.
Right. Yeah.
Obviously. But I really like that we just don't know. There is so much ambiguity in this film, just like there is in life. And I think it's done beautifully.
Yep.
Any other final thoughts?
Nope.
Nah.
All right. Well, somebody I used to know, you can see on Amazon Prime, and Return to Seoul is in theaters. I think it's safe to say that we would recommend both of them. Am I correct in that?
As for me, yes.
Yes. Yeah, I'd recommend both.
And for me as well. Holy holy shit, I cannot believe we are unanimous in recommending two films this week. I feel like it's been a long, long time since that's happened.
Yep. We usually have at least one dissenter.
I know. Woohoo! Go us and go movies. Love it. So we want to give a huge thank you to our editor, Otto Klammer. Otto, thank you for being so awesome. And thank you for doing what you do week in and week out.
Thanks, Otto.
Thanks, Otto.
You can find Spoiler Piece Theater anywhere you listen to podcasts. We are all over the place. You can also find us at our website, spoilerpiece.com. That is also, in addition to our episodes, where you can find the link to our merch, because we have the merch and it is awesome and fabulous and you should check it out. Get some for yourself. Get some as gifts for others. Who knows? You can also follow us on social media. We are all over the place. We're at Spoiler Piece on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Letterboxd, TikTok, all the places. So come follow. Say hello. If you want to reach out to us, you can email us, spoilerpiece@gmail.com, or you can give us a call
at 862-21-PIECE.
You can leave us a voicemail message. You can text us and say, yeah, these movies are terrible. No, you won't say that. I guarantee it. You'll be like, yeah, these movies rock and you guys are right. And I'm so excited that these movies are amazing. But seriously, we love hearing from you. So please let us know what you think. And speaking of letting us know what you think, consider giving us a rating. Rating and reviewing us really helps us out. It helps get the word out about the show. You can go to ratethispodcast.com/spoilerpiece. It will take you to your preferred platform of choice. You can also rate us directly on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify as well. That helps us out so, so much. Thank you in advance. And if you've already left a review, thank you. We love it. We love you. As we mentioned at the beginning of the show, Patreon this week. We had a patron request. It was the Birdcage. So super fun conversation, as the patron episodes always are. You can go check that out if you are a patron. And if you're not a patron, consider joining, because for $5 a month, you get access to weekly bonus episodes. And you also get to vote in monthly polls. And you also get access to our back catalog of episodes, bonus episodes. And it's about 300 and... they're a lively bunch and a wide variety of films that we cover from across the decades and genres. Yep. So a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd love to have you join the Spoiler Piece family. It would be awesome.
Yeah. Become a spoiler peep.
That's right. We love the spoiler peeps. But we love you patrons and we love you listeners. We're so glad you're here and we're so thankful for you. My name is Megan Kearns. I write film reviews for Edge Media Network. I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association, and I'm a member of Gallica. You can follow me on Twitter at OpinionSWorld or on Instagram and Letterboxd at TheOpinionS.
My name is Dave Riedel. I write for the Chicago Reader, and I talk about movies. I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association. You can find me anywhere there's a Letterboxd, an Instagram, or a Twitter as Dave Sees Movies.
My name is Evan Crean, co-chair of the Boston Online Film Critics Association and co-author of your 80s movie guide to better living. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd as Real Recon, and that's real as in film reel.
And we'll see you next time.
Bye.